Hello everybody, Andy Burt here. Welcome along to episode 198 of the Early Excellence Podcast. In this week's episode, we're joined by Emma Weston from Verso International School in Bangkok in Thailand. And it's a great conversation. Emma tells us all about her role as a learning designer. We talk about the learning environments, which are really interesting. In fact, Emma gives us a tour of the learning environments and the different spaces that they have available there. Then also we talk about building on children's interests and also developing fascinating projects as well. So there's a lot here that I think you'll find interesting. So here you go. Here's my Early Excellence podcast chat with Emma Weston. I'm very pleased to say that we're joined today by Emma Weston, who is at Verso International School over in Thailand. Emma, hello, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Enjoying the nice cool weather at the moment in Thailand. It's about 21 at the moment, which is quite cool for us.
Yes, I should think so. Yeah, see, we're just starting December over here, and it's cold, wet, and windy. And I think 21 degrees sounds a lot better to me. Definitely. It's great to see you. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to talk all about your own context. So, in terms of your career, first of all, and then we're going to go from that into the context of the school. Because you do loads of interesting things there. You know, I've heard all about it from my colleague Phil, who works with international schools. And I've been really keen to talk to you for a while about the practice and what, you know, how you go about doing it, really. I think people who are listening are going to find it really interesting to find out about how, for older children, actually, you can build on lots of the key principles of the EYFS, and that actually you can do that in actually quite a way that is still very much challenging. That it's not about a lack of challenge there, but it's about engaging the children and going with their interests in lots of ways. So I think it's really interesting. Okay, so let's start with an introduction, if that's all right, Emma. Can you tell us about yourself, first of all?
Yeah, sure. So I trained in the UK and started off school working in a school in Bromley in London, and I spent the first 4 years of my career there. I started off in year three in my teacher training. I was one of those teachers that spent one day in reception, cried and said, please never make me go back there again. And then during the first year, my head teacher came up to me and she said, Emma, I can see it in your heart. You're an early years teacher. Next year, you're going to go to reception. And if you hate it, for the rest of the time you're at this school, you can choose your year group. But I'm going to ask you to give me 1 year. So I was like, oh,
good.
I don't
that
know about
like
that.
Pretty good trade-off.
Yeah.
That's a good trade-off, I think. Yeah.
I was like, I think it's worth it. So I was okay, I'll go. And we're very fortunate. We had a lovely indoor, outdoor provision, open plan. We had a special needs unit attached. So actually budget wasn't a huge problem. So we had quite a lot of funds to play around with. We were lucky enough to get the outdoor shelter that everyone's after and make the outdoor space have some AstroTurf so that we could deal with it when it was really muddy without it being too difficult, and soft surface. So basically that head teacher knew me very well and found my heart, because that was kind of the start of my career, I guess, because I just fell in love with teaching even more.
And good for that head teacher who kind of spotted something in you, really, as well.
I think. I'll forever be grateful. So had a wonderful time there working with different teachers, learning about different ways of doing things. And then me and my husband bought a house, and on two NQT kind of teacher salaries, we couldn't afford ham, and we decided that it was time for us to look at what other options there are. So we applied abroad, and we went to Taiwan. So I had 2 years at Taipei European School, and it made my little unit that I had in London look very, very different, because we then had a full form entry open plan classroom area with 120 students. So had a lot of experience working out, okay, how are we going to get this to work? How are we going to be able to track pupils? How are we all going to get to use our strengths? How can the children move around and us still kind of get an understanding about where they're at? So I had a lovely time exploring that. And I think as a lot of international teachers. Me and my husband were like, oh, we're not going to be abroad for long. We'll go somewhere else.
That's always the case. That is always the case. That's people say to me, you know, when I speak to international teachers, yeah, we were just going to be doing this for a year or two, and then we were going to head back to the UK. And they just sort of get very much swept away with the whole thing, the lifestyle, the culture, the country, you know, the whole thing just sort of really kind of, they take it to their heart and they can't imagine then moving back. And no, I guess that's the same for you.
Yeah, because now I think we're 12 years, 10 to 12 years we've been now in Thailand. So after Taiwan, came to Thailand, assuming again it would be a short-term thing before we had headed home, went to another school in Bangkok before Verso, into early years. It was an exciting time at the school. All new teachers, the early years was doubling in size. And again, I had an incredible time because I've been so fortunate to work with such fantastic educators. We have the ability, teaching internationally, to look at kind of the UIFS, look at whatever the curriculum documents are and take the best bits and work out if there are bits that, you know, we don't want to do the baseline assessment in the same way, for example. So we have a lot of flexibility there. So we created a wonderful, wonderful community there. I had a lovely, lovely time. Spent a few years as head of early years, moved to head of primary and head of school for a while. We went on a bit of a journey there. I think the frustration that many early years teachers have about where you feel that when children start to go into key stage one, they begin to lose some of the skills that you've tried so hard to teach.
Yes. Yeah.
So I worked quite a lot with year one and year two at that school to see how we could start putting provision in place. We were really lucky. Actually, we had Phil from Early Excellence come over and we ran a conference for teachers across Asia. I think someone even came from Europe and America. So Phil was very proud of that.
That's pretty good going, isn't it? That's commitment, I think. When you're getting on a plane to turn up at a conference, I think that's real commitment, definitely, and exciting.
So we had kind of 3 days learning together there and, again, had a wonderful time. Then a position, so this new school, which I've been at now for 5 years, opened called Verso. And the idea behind it is it's linked to IDEO, let me go back to the beginning here. So there was a group of teachers that went together to something called the Project Studio, and they thought, what is wrong with education? What do we want to change? And what's great about educations around the world? And they spent a year going to different schools. So there's like the traveling school that you might have seen, a boat that the kids go around the world through this boat and the classrooms.
I've seen that. Really interesting. That sounds amazing.
Name, but I think it's called The Traveling School.
That sounds incredible.
So they went there, they went to some schools in San Francisco, there's a school in Hong Kong, I think it's called the Harbor School. So basically visited all of these kind of alternative education options and worked with this design company to design a school. And they came up with the concept that is now Verso. And what it was in the second year of operations when I joined. What excited me is it's like, wow, there's play all the way through the team. So there are actually AP exams now, but the idea is that A-level exams or IB exams are not the end result that the children need to get. Actually, in America, not every school has exams that children need to get into university. So they get a high school diploma, and that's what they can use for their university entrance. So the school's kind of looked, okay, we can use this as a way that we can teach kids. They can get the academic skills, they can have the rigor, they can get the results and get into university, but for a bit of a different path with creativity and really design thinking and innovation at the heart of everything we do.
Yeah, right at its core. Now I think that's really interesting because that's a completely different approach to many schools that we see, isn't it? And a different approach to generally the kind of the curriculum within certainly the UK is that actually you often find that you have your early years approach and then often kind of from key stage one onwards, then a very different approach. And it's not always like that. There are some schools who really try to push back, you know, push boundaries and to have a more playful approach as you go through into key stage one. But usually it sort of grinds to a bit of a halt. Either they're in key stage one or sort of fairly soon after, I think. Mm-hmm. Whereas you're talking about an approach that embraces that right the way through, which is really, really interesting.
Yeah, it's really exciting. So I started here in early years, and I was meant to start here in early years, but then enrollment numbers, staffing, everything changes, and ended up in year two, which actually is a lot more exciting than I kind of thought. Because like you say, early years practice is kind of good early years practice, but in the rest of us, it was maybe where things are a little bit more unusual or different compared to other schools. So it was really exciting to kind of, and is exciting to be part of that journey. I'm now the coordinator for years two to year five. Yes. And we have a very kind of playful approach in how we teach. We have a lot of inquiry, and design thinking is kind of really embedded in what we do. So how we kind of teach differently, I guess it links to how we plan and deliver our lessons, what our kind of unit or quarter or term looks like, but also our learning environment.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Can I just check so that I understand, please? In terms of year groups, are the year groups that you talk about, so year two to year five, are we talking about the same year groups as they are in the UK? Or are we talking about a different, sometimes there are differences, so I just wanted to check.
Yes, same year group. So I've changed the wording, actually. So if you were thinking about American system, it's grade one to grade four.
Okay.
But I've just transitioned it because, interestingly, again, when we're looking at, we use the New York State standards, year one is within the early years.
Yeah.
And it's actually year two where we start the primary phase.
Interesting. That is really interesting, because a lot of the research points to actually how year one children particularly are much, much more like actually their early years children in terms of how they go about learning and the experiences that they need. Whereas actually it's at year two, at seven, where you tend to see changes, where children start to be able to respond more to direct instruction and to work in a more abstract way and all of those sorts of things. So it's really interesting that actually you've set things up in a way that reflects that. That often you don't see that. So I think that's really good.
Yeah, it does seem natural, because obviously when we're chatting in the UK and things, and you're looking at brain-based research, it is saying that seven's that age point that it changes. So it's great to see, because although we're having a play-based approach, of course, there's still differences between our early years phase and our lower loop phase. And it does feel that this is more of a natural child appropriate time to kind of have that switch, you know, where there is a bit more expectation on direct instruction, sitting time, specialist lessons, those types of things.
Yes, no, absolutely. You know, that sort of progression as you go through school, I think, is important. And I think when we do talk about something play-based, it's great, of course, to bring something play-based into Key Stage One, but we have to make sure that the progression is there also. It's not just about repeating reception. It's not just about doing the same thing twice. It's about understanding actually the what and the why behind it, so that it's appropriate to that year group. So we've got learning that is appropriate for six-year-olds and seven-year-olds and then potentially beyond. Otherwise, I think we're missing a trick, really. And I think, which is what is interesting about your approach, is that actually you're taking it further than that and really making sure it is appropriate.
Yeah. And I think that's sometimes what school leaders or parents find challenging when they see play-based environments for older children. And even some teachers, I remember one lesson I had, and I was getting observed, and they said, oh, what's the learning in this activity? And it was a farm setup. And I was like, oh, well, you know, they're learning about the farm. And they're like, yeah, but what do you really want them to learn? And I was like, but look at this. I spent hours setting this up. It's got hay. It's got a barn. I mean,
how very dare you.
Yeah, exactly. This is Pinterest worthy here. It was a real pinnacle point in my career, which made me think, no, it's about really deep. What is the learning? And I think
it is. Yeah.
You can only have play-based learning going through older children, especially when we're looking how old we go to here, having those experiences for them, with the rigor and thought behind it. And it takes a lot more planning and discussion and teamwork than a traditional approach.
Definitely. It's not an easy way out, I don't think. You know, although, you know, play is often associated with, of course, enjoyment and fun and all sorts of things. And it is there, without a doubt. But certainly it's not an easy way out in terms of teaching. I think, you know, it actually requires probably more skill and more planning to a certain extent and a lot of thought in order to really do it well. Yeah, no, interesting stuff. Okay, so tell us then about I'm interested in lots of things to do with your work. But first of all, I think it would be really useful if you could take us on a bit of a tour, if that's possible, of the space that you use for your teaching. Describe to us how you use that space. And of course, this is a podcast, so it's something that people will be listening to rather than seeing. But if you can describe, and, you know, together we can describe what it is that we're seeing and how you're using that space. Because of course, the classroom environment, the learning environment, if we're talking about something that is about hands-on learning, that is about the children exploring and using materials, and that's at the heart of what you're doing, the environment itself is crucial, isn't it? So I thought we'd start with that, if that's okay. Are you able to do that?
Yeah, of course. So one thing we're really lucky about is that we have huge spaces. So we also have mixed age classes running all the way through. So the space I'm in at the minute is for year two and year three. And there's times when they go into age group grouping, there's times they go into ability group grouping, but there's also times where we play, engage, explore, choose together. So we have very flexible kind of walls and spacing. So we can open and close doors. The space I'm in at the minute is actually a closed space because it's our maker's space. So we're very fortunate with the tools that we have here, but we want it to be safe. So we have decided to have this as a closed room so that the children can ask and kind of be responsible if they're coming in here with an adult.
Okay. So I'm just going to describe it to people. So what I can see then is a space that is quite a large classroom space. You have what looks like sort of concertina walls that kind of will come across to separate out spaces. And then you've got a glass wall as well so that you can see the whole of the space outside of that. Within it, you've got some lovely curved furniture that is about the sort of height of furniture that you'd expect within an EYFS classroom. It's got open shelving in it so that the children can access materials and resources. And as you were saying, it's your maker space. So as we're looking around, as you're holding up the camera and scanning around, I can see a woodwork bench. I think I saw clay work just before. I can see junk modeling and cardboard work. But to a standard that I can see from the work that actually these are older children using those materials, that actually they've combined materials, they are linking materials together, they're using joining techniques in a really interesting way that is beyond what you would generally see within the EYFS. So really interesting to see that kind of play-based approach and hands-on approach, and what it looks like, physically what it looks like, I think, is interesting.
Yes, for makerspace tools, we use something called Make Do, which I'm not sure if people on the podcast have heard of, but I'd really, really recommend. And it's these kind of screws and bolts that are kind of child-appropriate. So it makes joining experiences so much easier, and for them to really be able to make their designs come to life. Yeah, really great resource if you're looking.
Can I just describe those to people? So they're like, you held up then a sort of a blue, what looks like a blue screw kind of, looks a bit like a piece of construction, like a construction kit, if you imagine it like that. And basically the model that I can see is like, it looks like a skyscraper type of thing that's been constructed out of lots of pieces of cardboard. And these blue screws have been used to fix the different pieces of cardboard together. And do they have cutters with it? Is that what you were just showing me?
Cutters here, so that you've got like fold and rollable ones. You've got kind of screwdrivery type ones, but they're all child led and appropriate, like age appropriate for safety.
Interesting. Yeah, I have seen those, but only once before. I've seen them at a school that I've previously done a lot of work with, called Oakwood Academy in Leeds. And they did loads and loads of very much a kind of child-centered approach, and did lots of that kind of modeling and exploring in really creative ways. And they use that material, but that's the only time I've ever seen that before. That's really interesting. So it's called Make Do.
Make Do, yeah. So we can maybe add a link or something, but it's definitely a resource I'd 100% recommend.
Interesting. Interesting. What I like as well is that you can see that kind of, from a UK point of view, you can see that kind of progression from EYFS into what you would call kind of design and technology skills further up the school. You know, those techniques that those children were using were complex techniques there, joining materials together and exploring on a bigger scale.
Definitely. And this was linked to like learning about different types of landmarks. So they also made kind of these like Eiffel Towers with the laser cutter. So they were able to use ThinkPad, I think they used, to kind of design the shape and then print it in the wood. And then they had the different pieces, a bit like a jigsaw, they put together and spray painted.
So you have a print, like a 3D printer?
Yes, we've got a 3D printer and a laser cutter in year 2 and 3 and in year 3 and 4.
Wow. See, that's amazing, isn't it? To be able to use something like that.
So we're so fortunate that the children can have these tools. So it's quite easy in a way to up-level the work because it's complicated, right?
Yeah.
So they're learning how to, you know, how do we place the wood? How do we mark the perimeter? When we're printing something with the laser cutter, what errors have happened? How can we edit and change that?
Yes, yes. Wow. And so you've got the makerspace that's got in it. I noticed woodwork. I think I noticed some work with clay behind you at one point. Is that right? You had clay pots and things like that. You've got your cardboard modeling and design space as well. What else? Could you just list what else do you have in there?
Well, we have quite a lot of robot type material. So we have some B-bots. We have some dash-bots, which are probably the level up from B-bots.
I've not seen those before. They're interesting, aren't they?
So we have some B-bots. We have some AR, VR hologram cubes that they can connect to an app.
Well, that sounds impressive. Yeah. Okay.
We have these like buttons so they can kind of create their own circuits that then they can create video games.
Okay.
Let's have a look at what else we have here. We have some photo album books where you can put pictures inside and record your voices.
Interesting.
These are pretty cheap, actually, this resource, and great. These are like 3D printer pens.
Okay, I've not heard of those before.
In the top, you put in this plastic string.
Okay.
And it heats up through the pen. And then the child uses the pen to draw what they're trying to make, and the plastic's melted through.
So almost like a glue gun kind of thing.
Yes.
But as a pen. And so the plastic goes through it rather than glue, the plastic goes through it. And then you create something when it comes out of the other side, you can draw something that then becomes a letter or a shape that you can hold.
Yes.
So what are they called? Because they are interesting, aren't they? Do you know what
they're called? We just call them 3D printer pens. I think if you looked on Amazon, you'd probably find them.
Okay. Really interesting. Okay.
And we've got something called Osmo, which has got different kind of kits. So you put the app on your iPad and then underneath there's different games, there's letters, there's numbers. So the kids manipulate in front of them, but it creates kind of activities onto the app.
Amazing. Yeah, that sounds great. And so technology is clearly a big thing for you, isn't it? You know, stating the obvious, it clearly is. You know, it's running right the way through what you've got there, isn't it? In the design and makerspace, you've got all sorts of uses of technology that are not a kind of just, it strikes me as not just a sort of an add-on to what you're doing, but actually very much part of what the children are creating and making there. That it's appropriate, isn't it? It's meaningful.
Yes. And then if I showed you the kind of makerspace for Free 4, you can see how it's got, you know, exactly the same as EY, how in a nursery classroom we'd have certain things, and then in a reception classroom we'd have the same things, and then some further challenge. So they move on to like the VEX robotics, which is rather than the robot already being made, you can build it yourself more so.
Yeah.
So there's that kind of progression of skills through everything.
Okay. Interesting stuff. Okay. Where are we going next then?
Let's go outside this room. So out here we have some different space. We have a construction zone. I think with wooden blocks, you can never go wrong.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I'd agree with that completely. So you've got a good set of, I'll just describe it. You've got coming out of the makerspace, then you've got another big space, and in it you've got open shelving, kind of sort of shelving with kind of open cubes so that children can access materials and resources. And as you pan round, I can see lots of different wooden blocks of different shapes and sizes. I can see other materials for the children to add to their structures and materials, so lots of different coloured shapes and construction materials. Really interesting stuff. Okay.
And over here, we've got like a board game area. So lots of different kind of learning-based games and activities.
Okay, so board games, so different ways of playing mathematical games. I can see, again, shelving with all kinds of different games on there for the children to create and to use.
These are like some dioramas that they've been making.
Yes, brilliant. I see. So they're creating their own sort of landscapes there for games.
Yes.
Interesting. So almost like a kind of Minecraft type idea.
Yes, yes, that's it.
Yeah, like it. Okay. Well, I'm interested as well, you know, that I really like the way that the furniture itself is something that is very much built on what you'd expect to see within an early years classroom, where the shelving is all very open and it sends a clear message to the children that actually this is for you. You know, this is for you to access and for you to use. And it's about your ideas. You know, there's a clear message there. Whereas when everything, of course, is packed away and a teacher gets it out, mm-hmm. it's the teacher that's leading it, isn't it? And there's a message there. You wait until I've got something out and then you can use it. Whereas right the way through your space, the message is basically, this is for you to access. I'm interested in what it is that you can do with it. Yeah. Do you see what I mean? I think that in itself is an interesting thing with older children.
Yeah, so this is kind of like the art and creative zone that they can go to, where, like you just say, it's got the papers they can select, different markers, pencils, paints, paint pots for mixing watercolors, paintbrushes.
Gosh, yes. And the range there is incredible, isn't it? I'm just looking across. So you've got different sorts of paints. So you've got the kind of squeezy bottle paints of all sorts of different colors and shades. You've got your palettes. You've got different kinds of paints there as well, haven't you? I think I can see watercolors. I think I can yeah. see other sorts of paints there for the children to explore. So the range there is incredible with all kinds of different sorts of brushes too.
Yeah. And then one thing that we have, which we've got kind of menus over here. So when we have kind of encourage some challenges, we have a time called Explore Time where the children can sign up to kind of different adult-led workshops that are linked to particular skills. So at the beginning, we're kind of doing the rotation on 4 weeks. We call ourselves learning designers rather than teachers. And we sit together and we design, okay, what skills do we really want to work on? Maybe it's paintbrush skills. Maybe we want to teach them how to use Scratch, like a coding program. And through that, we'll kind of work out which skills. And then the children will have a set number of workshops to attend. So this one I'm looking at here is for art. Their acquired skills are going to be understanding different styles of self-portrait art, using measurements to map out facial dimensions, and recognize and capture accurate traits when drawing. Then they've got kind of the 4 workshops that they attend. One's learning about the half face, one's learning about matching skin tones, creating block lettering, and expressing identity through art. And once they've achieved all those, they'll share with the other learners, this is what we did, this is what we learned. And one of the favorite things, let me see if I can find one, the kids get a badge to show, okay, we've achieved that workshop, a bit like brownies, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So we make our own kind of badges. So then they get a profile of kind of, what have they chosen? And we get to keep a track. Okay, this child's often choosing tech-based explore workshops, really what they're into. And then we can encourage them to do others. And also it gives a profile of the child that we can talk to the parents about.
That's interesting. Yeah, yeah. So you were just showing me one of the badges that the children then kind of achieve, really. You know, that if they are an expert in using certain materials, certain resources, they get to wear a badge. And then you have an idea of their expertise, you have an idea of their interests and fascinations, and you think about actually how can we have conversations about extending that further. Yeah, interesting stuff.
And they love collecting the badges, as I'm sure you can imagine. We just bought this badge maker again. I think it was from Amazon or something like that. And super easy to create your design on Canva, print it out. And then once you've got kind of the empty badges, you just pop them together. And it's a very joyous occasion when we do the badge ceremony.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. That sounds great. Okay. So, and where are we now then?
So now we're inside. So the makerspace at the moment in the year 2 and 3 classroom is its own space. Then the area we were where we saw the art area, the construction area, the game areas, what we kind of call the shared space that we spend some time in together. And sometimes we work out there. And then we kind of have, I guess, probably doesn't look like it, but this is our like more formal classroom space.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So we're coming into a space that probably would be, I would think, more familiar to many people in terms of kind of teaching with older children. And that is a space which now has, it has generally non-slip floor throughout, but then a carpet space with an interactive whiteboard. You've then got some zones around the edge of the space. So you've got some shelving around the edge with some tables. You've got, let me see, is this a reading area?
Yeah, this is like a book selection area.
Yeah, it's a book area with a nice big sofa.
Yep, to sit on this low floor to work, that's okay.
Okay.
Or sit at a higher table. And then all of our walls are whiteboards.
I see. So you've got those sort of concertina walls that can be drawn across to separate out spaces or to open out spaces. But each one's got a whiteboard on it. And so the whole wall is a whiteboard, which must be great. You know, it must be so handy, actually, if you're working with a group in that space.
Yeah, and we're doing a lot of work at the minute on building thinking classrooms. And through that, there's so much evidence about we know it in early years anyway, but the benefits of working vertically, standing up at the whiteboard, you know, we'll just maybe print the question that the kids are working on and have different rules. So one of the rules might be if you're the child holding the marker, you can only write what someone in your group tells you.
Okay, yeah. So you're the scribe, if you like. Yeah, so you get, and the knock-on effect of that is that other children have a turn at then speaking, don't they? Because often the more confident child will be the person with the marker and they'll be the scribe, and then they end up speaking and writing. Whereas actually what you want to do is to get other children involved in that process and kind of really making sure that everybody is involved in having their turn. Now, interesting.
Yeah, so the walls for that work really, really well. And it's really helpful because we do kind of, there's a lot of evidence about the randomizing grouping for this. So they might come in, pick a card. Okay, you're on board six. And then they just go straight over to board six. There's no huffing and puffing about who's in your group, why is in your group. And it's incredible to see when the children are working in these mixed ability groups at the wall, they always surprise you kids, you know?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. I wondered as well, you know, you were saying about kind of, you have that sort of shared space that we just saw. And I think you were saying that different ages of children access it. Is that right? Or did I misunderstand that?
No, that's correct. So year two and year three share that space and mix in between that space a lot. And then in this, it changes every year. But this year we've decided we're going to have a year two kind of class and a year three class. But the year before we had two mixed year two, three classes. Okay. So we just decide if we think it's better based on the children, if they're in mixed age groups or age grouping and how we want to organize that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. And interesting, I think as well, then you've got some older children who potentially are modeling and scaffolding for the younger children, that they are showing, you know, they become the leaders, if you like, the kind of the play leaders, showing the children what they can do with those materials, showing them how they join materials together in interesting ways or how to use things, and some of the younger children potentially learning from that. Is that what you found?
Yeah, 100%. And it's particularly helpful in that first year when they're moving out of our EYFS and coming into kind of the next grade level to have those year threes really help guide the year twos really helps. And it helps the year threes also grow up, you know, and feel that sense of pride.
No, interesting. Interesting. Okay. So we're in the kind of the more slightly more formal space, the classroom space. And how do you use this space? Do you use it then for whole class work, group work as well?
Yep. So we'll use it in different ways. So sometimes we'll be in mixed age classes in here. So we'll come in the morning. We have something called community time. You know, you talk about what are you going to do today? What's going on? What projects are you working on? Then for literacy at the moment, we actually have a literacy specialist too. So we would split into mixed age groupings at the moment, but it changes all the time. So we would have one learning designer in the middle space with a group of children, one in one classroom, more formal classroom space, one in another, just because the problem with open plan, complete open plan, is sometimes you want the children to be able to focus on you. And if they can hear three teachers talking and three groups singing a song or listening to a story, it can be really distracting. So that's why we have decided to close up some of these doors so that we can kind of lower the cognitive load in some way for the kids.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that will resonate with many teachers and particularly early years teachers, I think. I think that's often a challenge, isn't it? When you have a unit or when you have an open plan space, kind of listening to the background noise when actually you're trying to deliver something yourself is challenging, definitely. But I like the way that you've got the flexibility to kind of bring walls in, really, if you like, you know, to pull walls across and separate out spaces. It strikes me as a space, you know, I didn't know what you said before about how a group of teachers got together and then went and researched around the world how to create a school and, you know, taking bits of ideas from different places in terms of having a design and an idea for the curriculum, but also a design for the building itself that would facilitate that. And it strikes me as a very sensible way of going about it. I'm sure that this will resonate with many people in the UK. I work with many schools and settings where I kind of wish you could turn the clock back, 5-10 years, and speak to the architect and say, you know, when you were putting that sink in over there, do you think maybe you could have had a bit more non-slip flooring than that? Because actually we can't really do anything on that postage stamp size space that you've created for the school there. Or do you think maybe that door shouldn't have been just right there because clearly that's opening into this, or whatever it might be? Whereas actually it strikes me that the space itself fits very well with the practice that is intended to happen within it in terms of work context.
Dance performance in another space. Yes, it definitely does fit. And it also fits. Different teachers have different styles and we have different classes. Yeah. Different classes have different needs. You know, I've had classes where open plan works perfectly and other classes where having that level of freedom just isn't appropriate. So the fact you can change based on not only months, but also times and people is great.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's really interesting. Thank you. Okay, so brilliant. We've had a tour around the space then. So we've had a really good look around and it really helped me, I think, to get a feel for actually your practice and the way that the provision links to it. And I think, you know, the design of the space is really interesting. I think, and I think this will resonate with many people back, you know, back in the UK. I say back in the UK, I am in the UK, but you know what I mean, Emma? that when we talk about design for the space, you know, you're the group of teachers who went and had a look at other practice and went and had a look at other contexts, they clearly came back with a very good idea of what it was they wanted the learning environments to be like, so that facilitated the practice. And the two are without doubt linked, aren't they? I work with many teachers and many early years teams particularly, who you want to turn the clock back for them and go back to kind of having a word with the architect and say, you know, could you change the layout of the room? Could you change the way where those doors are? Could you not have quite so many doors leading into this space? Because that's really not helping us. Or could you have a bigger non-slip flooring space rather than that little postage stamp that's right next to the sink? You know, those sorts of things that I think will be familiar to many people, I think, in the UK. But it strikes me that actually when the school was designed, that design of building fits perfectly with the practice that we're talking about that you've got within it, definitely. Okay, so that's the first thing. Secondly, what I thought, and I wondered whether you could do this, is having talked about that space, the layout, it strikes me that it then is open to loads of possibilities, but that's a challenge in that you've got your children coming with interests and fascinations. You've also got alongside that, you've got your adults who know what it is you want the children to learn, and that the adults are doing a kind of a dance with the children there. They are saying, right, this is your interest. And then the adult is sensitively adding in what it is we want the children to learn, and potentially sometimes using the children's interests as a vehicle to move that forward. And that's quite complex, I think, to be able to do that and really highly skilled. So I wondered whether you could give us some examples of what that looks like in practice. Would that be all right?
Yeah, of course. So there's kind of two different ways I'd say we do that across the curriculum. One is through explore time. Like I gave that kind of art example earlier, I can think of another example where we were looking at using drones. And I had one learner in particular who was kind of obsessed with drones and definitely not obsessed with reading. So I was like, how can I really help this little boy get engaged with reading and follow his interest? So we worked on like a mapping reading drone project. And of course, you know, maybe at the start we had the luxury of being able to do one or two, a teacher to maybe one or two learners, but that doesn't continue to last. So luckily, you know, if you say who wants to do some reading and map work with drones, almost everyone does. So then, of course, there was other children that could engage and work on that project. So you just look at what are the children's needs and what are their interests and what can I plan that can really engage and work on that with them. That can kind of happen during the explore time with either the set workshops or planned workshops for the teacher where you're kind of particularly targeting a group of children, like an intervention, but hopefully with a bit more fun behind it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That's really interesting. So you've got that kind of example where a child is interested in one thing but not interested in another, but your challenge is to actually weave the two together, really, and to bring the two together. And I know you do, I think you've mentioned before, you do lots of project work as well. And I think when we met before, we met a long time ago, didn't we, to sort of talk through some ideas for this. I've got a feeling that you mentioned something to do with street art. Is that right?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that? A project to do with street art?
Yeah. So we were learning about social studies, so different types of governments. So they have to learn about what is a democracy? What is communism? What does that mean? What do kind of those structures in society mean? And then they've got kind of their visual art objective. So they're learning about how to analyze art, how to create different types of art. So this was with year 4 and 5. So this is what we kind of call our learning lab unit. So we started off the unit, it was the beginning of the year, and it was such a fun way to make class rules. So instead of, you know, your typical, I've done it probably 14 out of 16 years. What do you think our class agreements should be? How can we be a nice community together? We dropped them on an island, the students, a fake island, obviously, and they were trapped there. And we explained to them that you've got to make origami frogs in exchange for food and water. If you don't have food and water, you're going to either lose your ability to talk or walk in tomorrow's game. And we gave them only a set number of pieces of paper. Anyway, the first day was a complete disaster. They were ripping the paper. No one made an origami frog. They had to exchange it for videos and stuff like that. Basically, everyone failed and died on the first day. The second day came along in the kind of simulation, and we helped guide them and gave different rules. And by the end of the week, we had our class agreements based on the society they had lived in this desert island and what had gone well and what hadn't gone well and how we wanted to work as a community. So that was kind of the start.
It sounds great. It sounds a little bit Lord of the Flies.
Yeah.
Which obviously has a bit of a sinister end. So I'm hoping it didn't have.
No, and then we learned about the kind of the different types of governments. And then we learned about how art can tell us a lot about the past and about government types. So we looked at how different times or different types of governments had different colours and why they might have used those colours. And we went on a street art walk along a Klong, where we've got very rich children here. They'd never been to a Klong. It's like a river in Bangkok that runs through that used to be used for boats to deliver things, but it's also sewage, so they're quite smelly. So yeah, we went on these Klong walks. We got a chance to see street art and graffiti, met some real graffiti artists, and there's a park where it's legal to kind of do your own tags. So the kids worked in groups to design their own tags representing kindness, because we were looking at, you know, how we're a community, and they actually got a chance to spray paint them onto a real wall in a park. So that was
amazing. It is amazing. Yeah, absolutely. And just finally then, just in terms of kind of drawing all of this together, I think it's interesting to talk about the impact. So we've talked about the space, we've talked about projects and that work that you do where you weave, as adults, you weave in learning opportunities into something which is playful and potentially play-based. What about the impact of that? You know, if somebody is, say, in the UK and they're listening to this and they think, well, actually, if you can do this with older children, we can surely do this with year one and year two children. What's the impact of it? If you had to make the case for it in terms of the children's attributes, in terms of their learning, what do you see in terms of the children that comes from the approach that you have?
So I would say what I've maybe seen without this approach is when children start to write stories, this is just one example, there are so many stories that are the same. They always start the same, you know, maybe they've woken up and it was all a dream, or they've all the the same place, they could become very repetitive, because maybe sometimes the creative edge gets taken away because we're feeling so battered down as teachers to kind of reach this objective and reach this objective and reach this objective. Kids can reach those objectives without as much direct and explicit instruction. We just have to target it more. So my suggestion would be really target when the children need to be guided by you and what they need to be guided on. You know, some members of your class have already really got a solid understanding of how to use a full stop. They don't need to sit through that again. They could actually be working on something else in a different way where maybe they're allowed a bit more creativity. You can then target them on what you really want them to work on. So the focus work group that we do in early years, I think, is a really great tool that can be used further up. 5 minutes of explicit instruction on what you really need the child to work on, rather than spending 15, 20 minutes on everything,
yes,
would be kind of my suggestion of how you still get, you know, great academic outcomes and you have more time and freedom to allow for exploration and learning through that way, because it does take more time. And that is the challenge. How do we timetable it? How do we manage it?
Yeah. And that, it always comes back to that, doesn't it? That timetabling of it. You know, if we don't have time because the timetable is completely full, when actually you're not necessarily talking about adding something into the timetable, you're talking about just a different approach that uses your time in a different way. Now, yes, your timetable is full, so how could we possibly add in 2 hours? You can't. But you could look at your timetable differently and the time differently and say, well, actually, those children, when they are accessing that provision, like in the, your maker space and the design space, that's your DT objectives pretty much for the year, all there because you've got that rich environment. And that, yes, you're teaching them skills within that, but you're not having to have one, just one kind of focus on that for a whole half term, because it's running through the year, not one whole burst that's going to take up so much of your timetable. It's kind of a different way of looking at it, isn't it? A different way of using your time and using your adults differently.
Exactly. And, you know, a literacy lesson doesn't have to look like what it's always looked like.
No, definitely.
Think outside the box. If you can get your outcomes at the same, how can you deliver that? And, you know, why not try it? Try it for a lesson and see if, you know, that the outcome for that lesson was the same as something else. Try it in maths. How does it go? Or start with stuff like DT, art, geography, you know, maybe where there's a bit more flexibility, and look at your objectives for the year. But I would just encourage maybe the teachers listening, why don't you just try seeing if you can do one lesson differently tomorrow? How can you give the ownership back to the children a little bit more while still giving them the instructions that they need?
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting stuff. Emma, it's been brilliant to speak to you. It's been really, really interesting. And thank you so much for giving us a tour of the space. And that's, I feel really lucky that we've had that. You know, I know that's tricky. You're trying to carry a laptop around and you've got all sorts of other things going on in school. So I really do appreciate it. And thank you for telling us all about the space, but also about the practice that goes on there. It really is interesting. But yeah, fascinating stuff. Thank you. Yeah,
and thank you so much for you and all of the podcasts. It's always great to listen. You know, I know a lot of international teachers go to Early Excellence for your website, your resources, your podcast. So thank you for everyone involved.
Thank you very much. Nice to see you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So there you go. Thank you very much to Emma for joining us for this week's episode of the podcast. And of course, to you people for listening along as well. That's about it from me. So have a good week, everybody, and we will see you next time.